I don't care. I will not get personally attached to any of it. If he doesn't like the deal, why would I do it? I mean, I've got, he's got, you know, sure, I've got some experience now, but he's got way more experience than I do. So if he sees something I don't, I'm just going to listen to him and I'll pass on the deal instead of going down that road by myself. I would rather have him on board. There's strength in numbers there. I mean, it's so critical to have a team. This is a team sport, something I had to get used to a little bit different, you know, in my past, all the different businesses I had. I didn't have any partners. This is a team sport where you really need partners on this kind of stuff. And the whole team is, you know, it's your accountant, your attorney, you know, your cost segregation analysis people.
Welcome to Passive Income Unlocked, where we unlock the doors to intelligent, hands-off real estate investing. We talk to experts in the space about what they do, how they do it, and most importantly, why they do it. My passion is careful, intelligent investing and closing the investing gap one investor at a time. While money doesn't buy happiness, passive income does have the potential to buy back your time. What would you choose to do with your time if you had enough passive income to live your best life? How would you like to spend your days? What kind of impact would you like to make? I'm here to tell you, dream big. There's no ceiling. It's all possible if you take consistent action towards your goals. It's been said that success is 80% mindset and 20% strategy. So we discuss both. Ready to gain knowledge and take action? Let's dive in.
Hey, everyone, and welcome back to the show. Today, I'm super excited to welcome back our amazing guest, Tracy Hubbard. Tracy, thanks for coming back.
Thank you so much for having me. It's great to be back.
Awesome. So everyone, if you didn't catch Tracy's first show, you should go back and listen to it. He's got an amazing life story that is well worth listening to. This time, we're going to dive into some of the details about syndication. So to give you a little bit of idea of his background, Tracy is a real estate investor and syndicator, professional 4X trader, and serial entrepreneur, having owned and operated 6 companies across various industries. And folks, Tracy just has a wealth of life experience. He's crushing it in the syndication space and can't wait to get into some of the details. So Tracy, why don't you go back and tell us about your first syndication, how that went, how you came across the deal, and a little bit of the story behind it, any issues that came up, et cetera.
Sure, I'd be glad to. Thank you. So, and we'll back up just a tad bit. You know, in 2015-16, as I was trading the financial markets, I started seeing a shift back in 2008-09 in the first bubble that. And the markets changed dramatically after that as the Fed got involved. And so as I traded the markets over those next several years, things weren't quite as they should be. So I thought, I saw a shift in the environment. So I thought, I've got to start preparing for what happens if this market doesn't work the way it used to. So I started looking at moving into hard assets in 2015-16. So that's when I started graduating over into real estate as that hard asset. And I had a background previously back in the last century when I was a young businessman in as far as industrial warehousing real estate. But this kind of real estate I was looking to move into now is multifamily apartments. And so I didn't have a lot of experience in that side of it. So what I did is I found a mentor and someone I partnered up with that had a lot of experience in that area. I brought some of my investors over from the financial world. And as we spoke earlier, that was a little bit of a gap I had to bridge, mainly because I didn't have all the experience in the multifamily world, but I had the financial experience. So they're looking at me and saying, well, you're a trader guy. What do you know about real estate? So I said, well, I know about investments and moving into hard assets, but I've got an experienced expert in this that is partnering up with me to give me the credibility and and just to know what to do and what not to do on that. So that's how we got going towards the first deal. And the first deal I put together was and I looked for quite a while. Don't get me wrong. I was looking from 2016 through 2019 and looked at a lot of stuff and trying to figure out how to scale it and everything else and put in a lot of offers and got rejected because I didn't have the experience. So that's when I finally realized I got to partner up. But once I did that, we found the deal in 2019. It took quite a while to get it to contract and get it closed.
Just real quick, I just want you to expand on one aspect of what you mentioned, which was, what do you think was the holdup before you got the mentor? Was it lack of experience was holding you, like you didn't have the credibility with the brokers? What was that specifically?
Yeah, all of the above. And it's sort of interesting from the point of experience comes in two different forms. Number one, you're right, the brokers, if you haven't done a deal, then they're not going to really give you a lot of time. I don't care how much money you have. because their biggest concern is, can you close the deal? Can you get it, you know, get it under, and can you get it closed? Because that's, you know, that's what they want to hear. And if you don't have the experience of it, they know that you're going to have trouble getting it financed, raising capital, all the things that go into the components that go into it to make the deal happen. So that was an issue. Number one was credibility with the brokers. Number two, the issue was credibility with your lenders. And I'm talking about agency lenders, you know, Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac, and also with some of the bridge lenders. You can have a whole lot of money and you can be a key principal and have the net worth and everything. But if you don't have the experience, the card, you know, to show them, yeah, I've done this, they're not going to loan you the money. I don't care how much money you have, because they don't want to loan money to somebody that doesn't know how to operate the business. And there's a huge business component to multifamily apartments. So that was what it took me a few years to figure out. Okay, I don't care what my net worth is, how much money I can raise. If you don't have the experience, you're not going to get the deal. So yes, that was critical, finding a partner on that deal to get me to that point. So then we got the deal under contract, and then we had to say, okay, now we got to raise some money. So it was a $3 million raise on the first one. We got it raised, got the deal done just in time to have COVID hit in 2020. So we sort of went through that process. Looking back in hindsight, you know, there's not a lot you can do about that other than I probably would have built in fact, and I did on the next ones, a little bit more contingency money on the raise side. I probably would have raised probably about another quarter to $500,000 on that thing, just as a contingency to help us get through some of those tough times to get all the rehabs done and everything. But we're back on track now. And in fact, we're still on target to do our refinance on the property. Now, we put in a pro forma to do a refinance between year two and three, and we'll probably do it right at year two, even with the 2020, you know, epidemic thing or whatever we want to call it that year. It will go down in history as that year. We'll still hit our target from that perspective. So that would be a lesson learned. And going forward on the next one, we definitely raised.
So Tracy, the lesson, what would you say the lesson was?
Make sure you have enough contingency capital. You know, and I put some in there, but probably not quite enough. There's so many things that can go wrong towards the end. And just as an example, on that first deal, the lender came in at, you know, at the, you know, 11th hour and said, okay, we're going to force you to spend this much more money on CapEx than what you planned. So that was a hit. We also got hit with a flood insurance thing that it wasn't correct, but it wasn't in a floodplain, but it got mislabeled as in a floodplain, one corner of one of the buildings kind of thing. But yet, because of that, we got hit with a huge flood insurance policy, and the other insurance policy just came back because Texas, along with a lot of the other states back then, insurance was just going nuts. And so what we budgeted in and what our lender actually budgeted in was not near enough. So we had probably $250,000 there of extra capital we had to have going into the deal that we didn't think we were going to need. So now all of a sudden, we weren't short, but we were close to being short. And I don't like being short. So.
For sure. Any particular guideline you would try to follow going forward as far as contingency?
Yeah, we put about a 10% contingency fee in there now on the raise. Just add a bump, another 10% in there for the unknowns. And granted, you know, you don't want to over-raise because it does dilute everybody's position, but you can always return the money. But it pays to have it there. And there's just so many things that can come up, especially when you're doing rehab on a property. And a lot of lenders, you know, require you to front that money to do all those rehabs before you get the draw. And sometimes these draws, when you do a draw request on your CapEx, it can take months. I mean, I've seen some of them take 9 months. Hadn't happened to me, but there's things that happen and come up. So you got to be able to float that in the meantime and to keep your contractors on site. You don't want to let them go to go to another project. So those are the kind of things you just got to make sure you've got the reserve funds to handle that.
Awesome. Thanks so much, Tracy. So what is it that, you know, now that you've told us a bit about your first syndication, can you just say how many units was it and what did it require as far as renovations?
It was actually a two property portfolio for a total of 173 doors. Properties are very close within two blocks of each other. So logistically, it worked real well. And it's basically a value add property. We're buying it, you know, at about 47 a door. And then we're putting in, you know, quite a bit of money for the upgrades and the rehab to bump our rents and do the refi in year two and three and, you know, pull cash out and ride it on out for till year five and either sell or refinance again or whatever the market does at that time. But that was the strategy on it. So we're not talking high-end rehab. These are Class C properties. So it's working class, you know, tenants. So we're not putting in granite countertops, but we are putting in there, you know, luxury vinyl tile flooring, you know, two-tone paints, refacing cabinets, resurfacing countertops, doing those kind of modifications, making them just, you know, upgrading them a little bit to get a little bit better rent out of the product and just to make it show better.
For sure. And did you do any common area renovations?
Yes. Pool areas, upgraded pool areas, pool furniture, grilling areas, dog parks, all those kind of things. And not that you can charge more for a dog park, but it attracts people that have pets. And we know, you know, pets are a big part of people's lives. I know I've been dealing with it the last couple of days. My daughter's puppy has been in the ER, you know, and it's, you know, got all of our attention. It's like, just make sure she's okay. We'll write the check. So people make, you know, dogs are, they're like family. So that's why, you know, you put in the dog park to attract those tenants. Now, granted, we charge pet rent and stuff like that, but the dog park itself is not like a revenue generator, like, you know, say, you know, trash pickup or anything like that, or cable service. But nonetheless, it does attract the tenant base.
For sure. And just to clarify, so you're doing these renovations upon lease renewals, like when a lease ends?
Yes, normally that's what you do. Now, some of these, when we went in some of these, they had like a 75% occupancy when we bought it, because it's already somewhat, you know, I wouldn't call it distressed, but, you know, it definitely was not stabilized. So from that perspective, it's good because you can go in there and immediately hit all those units that don't have anybody in them. So you don't have to wait that much time. So you can get your renovations done a lot faster. And that works out great unless you have something like COVID come in there and just slam the door on all, you know, even your contractors trying to get them out there to do stuff. So we were sort of stuck there. Okay, what do we do to get things leased up a little bit at the same time? So we sort of had put things on hold for a little bit, essentially, but now we're back on track. And when you buy a property like that, I'll just go ahead and touch base on this, and just something you need to prepare for, and something we prepare our investors for. You know, you go in there with a 70 or 75% occupancy, you just need to know that it's going to drop as soon as you buy. That's a given. And usually because you're going to be cleaning house a little bit, number one, because usually there's bad, you know, bad money on the books. You know, the old seller will have carried, you know, tenants for 6 months, 7, 8 months, whatever. And there's, you know, they owe thousands of dollars and it's showing as occupied. But hey, they're not going to pay. They haven't paid in 6 to 7, 8 months. So they're probably not going to pay. So you need to clean that out. So what happens is your occupancy goes down. So you're going to take a dip before you come back up. And, you know, you just need to make sure your investors know that going into it, so they don't freak out when you give them a communicate with them on their investor reports. And that sort of goes into something else too. We're over communicators with our investors. We send out monthly detailed investor reports as far as occupancy, what we're doing. I visit the property a lot, and it's a 4.5 hour drive from where I live. But, you know, I go up there every 2 weeks, mainly because we have rehabs going and I've got several properties up there that are in the process right now. So it's just works out for the schedule to be able to do that. But I take pictures of what we're doing, you know, who the new hire is, who they are. You know, it's a family atmosphere. This is who we are, what we're doing, and where it's going, because pictures tells a lot of the story. So investors like that kind of stuff. So we keep them very informed. You know, something I learned a long, long time ago in business, dealing with customers and investors and everything. Most people can handle bad news. What they can't handle is no news if there's bad news. So you can't hide it. You just need to be upfront with it and just deal with it. And most people can deal with bad news as long as you're upfront with it and just work your way through it and have a plan, and definitely have it.
Yeah, that's such a good point. I've heard along those lines that bad news doesn't age well. So
it's not a fine wine.
So if it's not delivered, like it gets worse with time. So the longer you wait to deliver it, the worse it's received. Yeah. And so can you give us an idea of what market you were in? Was this close to your home? Could you go there? Were you going there? Were you doing this remote?
It's in Lubbock, Texas. That's where it's at right now. That's where all three of my properties are right now, are in Lubbock, Texas.
And that's close to your residence, right?
4.5 hours. I live around Fort Worth, Texas. So it's about 4.5 hours away.
Okay. So then what was that like? Like, were you going to the property consistent basis? Were you able to do it from afar?
This show is sponsored by Lux Capital Investment Group. Lux Capital provides pre-vetted, highly favorable investment opportunities on a risk-adjusted basis. Our opportunities are diversified across asset classes, geographies, and operators. We are nothing short of rigorous in our approach to evaluating investments. We focus on downside protection, conservative underwriting, recession-resistant asset classes, and forging strong relationships with operating partners and investors. If you want to be an intelligent, hands-off investor and gain access to the types of deals that I like to invest in personally, make sure to go to lux-cap.com, L-U-X-E-CAP.com, and sign up for our newsletter.
You start off from afar, but usually if you have a major CapEx project going on, major rehab, and this depends on your property management company. We have a great property management company. We had to switch them out after a year because the other one really wasn't getting it done. But personally, you know, I've got investors with money at risk. I've got money at risk. I want to be involved. You know, I am the asset manager, so I'm going to go up there and be involved in it and be on site. It's just sort of interesting. I mean, the more attention you pay to it, the more attention your managers will pay to it because they know that I'm going to be there. And I'm not, a hard, nose kind of guy. I mean, I'm a former Marine and I've got lots of experience in leadership, but being hard nosed is not always the best, way to go do that. It's like I tell my managers when I'm there, and I usually always end it on this. And we have our weekly meetings on the phone when I'm not there. I ended with, what do you need to do your job? What can I get you? Because my job is to help them do their job. I'm not there every day dealing with issues, and they are. So I know it's a stressful deal. So I'm just trying to make sure you have everything you need to do your job. And if you have that and you do your job, then hey, we get along great.
Yeah, such a good point. Whenever you're managing anyone, that's just such a good lesson and something that, we all need to pay attention to when we bring folks on that are working for us. So what did that require for you as far as you going to the property? Were you going on weekends, once a week, once every couple weeks?
It's every 2 weeks right now. I'm on that schedule. I'll be leaving Sunday to go back up there. And I go up Sunday night, usually stay through Wednesday, come back Thursday.
Okay. Yeah, that's great. And I guess it helps that all three of your properties are in Lubbock. So it makes it kind of more manageable from an operational standpoint for you.
Yes.
Okay, great.
It's a great town. It's a good town. It's not, a huge town. I mean, it's about over 200,000 population, but the MSA is over 600,000 in the area. So probably one of the, I probably shouldn't be saying this because it's, I don't want everybody flocking there trying to compete with me, but I'll just tell you right now, I'm very well versed in that market and people know me there. So I don't need competition trying to buy stuff also, but it's going to come sooner or later, but these tertiary markets, as we call them, are becoming more and more popular.
For sure. So, you did your first syndication, you started it. What compels you to continue to do syndications?
I love the aspect of multifamily and just all the different things to it, as far as of all the different real estate. I think multifamily is the best, comparing it to, all the retail, warehousing, commercial, everything. I think multifamily in single family rentals, I think multifamily is the best area to be in of that asset class. I think you get the best returns. I think it's the best guard against inflation and recession from the standpoint of people always have to have housing. That's also why we stick into the class B and C properties, not the class A properties. I just think it's probably the best one to go into. And I see a great future in it right now. And because of the way money is right now, interest rate wise, I think it's a prime time to be involved in it. And from an interest rate standpoint, everybody's saying, oh, rates are going to go up. And well, I will tell you, nobody knows. Nobody, if they say they know, they're liars because no one has a crystal ball on this. I will just tell you from my experience of dealing in the Forex and currency markets, which are all interest rate driven all over the world. So I know that area very well. We can stay where we're at ad infinitum forever. The reason I know this is because Japan's been doing it for over 20 years. When I say, it's a zero interest rate policy of the Fed. And because of that, they're saying, oh, rates, inflation can go back. We're going to have 12 and 18% interest rates again. I just don't see it because when the wheels fall off, the government doesn't want that because there'll be chaos in the streets. And so they're not going to let that happen. And so what's the solution? They're going to keep it where it is. It's just a belief. I think it's going to be down there, way, way, way down there for a long time. Now, do I know that for sure? No, I do not. That's why when I underwrite things, I underwrite them on my refinance to where rates do go up and to make sure the project will still cash flow and still make sense. So you've got to prepare for the worst, but you still hope for the best. And I think we're going to have cheap money for quite a while.
For sure. Yeah, there's definitely several folks who are in the perpetually low interest rate camp. So, you know, while no one has a crystal ball, it's, I think you said it well, prepare for the worst, hope for the best. So Tracy, tell us about your second multifamily syndication. What was different about that? Why did you decide to go for that second property instead of, you know, how is it different from the first? Can you give us some color on that?
Sure. It's sort of interesting. And the property was not for sale when I first saw it. I was actually riding around town with a broker who actually has become a very good friend of mine. And we just have a lot in common. And so he and I, even when I go to Lubbock, I mean, we just sort of a standing thing. We always have lunch or dinner when I'm up there. And so he was born and raised in the area. So he knows the area very well. And now he knows me. So I get to see a lot of deals that don't ever make it to market. It's that pocket listing kind of thing that you really, really want, and building those relationships. And he knows I can close the deals. So that's sort of how I met him. He was dropping something off to a guy, the owner of the property that I was going to buy, ended up buying. And so he went inside and he came back out. And I said, this is a nice property. I go, is this for sale? He goes, well, no, it's really not for sale. The guy only, you know, he bought it, you know, not quite a year ago. And so, you know, he just really hadn't had it very long. I said, okay, well, if it ever comes on the market, let me know. Well, fast forward about another 6 months or a year, he'd owned it. And long story short, he sort of, in my opinion, mismanaged the CapEx and how it did. He spent a lot of money, but not in the right places. And, you know, talk about what I was talking about. One of the things you need is a contingency money. I don't think he had enough contingency money. So he ran out of funds and got into a tough situation and his occupancy went down. So it was almost a distressed property. So my broker came back to me and said, hey, are you still interested in that? I said, yes. He goes, well, if you want to take a pass at it, I think he's probably motivated enough to sell. So it took a year, you know, to get the thing from the time we started talking to finally get it under contract, but it never was on the open market and officially. And so we got it under contract and got it done.
So how did you go about, I just want to circle back. There's so much there in what you just mentioned. How did you go about building this relationship with broker? You know, many of us are aware that those broker relationships are key and sounds like you've developed this very mutually beneficial relationship. How did that start?
Well, interesting fact, the first property I got up there was not through, it was actually through a broker out of Dallas. So it wasn't the one that I met up there. But while I was up there, I was, you know, looking for more properties in Lubbock because I have those two. It just makes logistical sense to have more. So I was looking around. So I called on a property that was for sale. And this is the broker that had it is the guy that I've become good friends with. And so, you know, we talked for a little bit. And so he picked me up and, you know, we drove around town. He was showing me this because he, like I said, he grew up there and he's, you know, he pointed a building. He goes, yeah, I sold that one back in 95. And, you know, I mean, just pointing out there isn't a piece of property there. He doesn't know who owns it or who's had it and how many has been sold, everything. So he just, and I thought, this is the guy that I got to get to know. I mean, because this is his town. So I just said, hey, you know, we just bought this deal over here and, you know, I'm on the hunt for another deal. So bring me what you got. I want to see it. We can close deals. And I gave him background on myself, gave him my bio, my partner, you know, showed him who he is. And my partner owns over 9,000 doors, you know, across, you know, several states. So he is a major player in the game. So basically what I was saying to the guys, hey, we can close a deal. If there's a deal there and it's valid, we can get it closed. So that gave me the credibility side. And then he started bringing me deals after that. And just because we're close to the same age, a little bit younger, but we have a lot of the same hobbies and tastes and stuff. So that's just sort of developed the friendship also.
That's awesome.
But you got to spend the time. Basically your question, you got to spend the time. If you want to get into a market, you're going to have to go there and visit them and, you know, make an appointment and physically get in front of them because they get 1,000 phone calls, you know, right now. So what are you going to do to make yourself stand out? And probably not a cookie bouquet, but, you know, you need to go at least, you know, shake their hands and meet them and get in front of them constantly.
Awesome. So do you anticipate continuing to buy in the Lubbock area based on this relationship with your broker?
Definitely. I'd like to own about 1,000 doors up there is what I would like.
Awesome. I love it. So what did you do differently in your second syndication from your first?
The contingency money. That's definitely one thing I did different. We just closed on that one in March of this year. So we hit the ground running, had a lot of, you know, plenty of excess cash. So I was able to cut those checks and get the contractor in there fast and hitting it and, you know, turning those units quickly because there again, Same thing. This property had a 60% occupancy when I bought it. So a lot of people, you know, that scares them, but it didn't scare us because I know the market, and this is property all, I'm talking next door to this one, are sitting in the 90s as far as the occupancy and better rents. So it's pretty obvious pretty quickly. It's not, you know, the area, it's not the town that's the problem. It was an issue there with the property manager and, you know, running it. So that didn't scare me. It's an opportunity because there again, because of the occupancy and some other stuff, I was able to negotiate. And it took a while to negotiate it, but I knew, you know, at some point in time, I just had to run him down, if we call the pain funnel, and just to see exactly at what point does he get to where, you know, it's time to, you know, cut it loose and go on down the road. And when we finally got there, then we got the terms and, you know, got it done. So that helped a little bit. And like I say, hit the ground running and hitting those rehabs. We're also going to be doing a rebranding on the property, simply because it has been mismanaged and so has a bad reputation. So you got to go in there and, you know, prepare for that kind of stuff. And that's also the kind of things you got to budget for, is rebranding, the cost of rebranding it, whether it's, you know, signage, naming, you know, search engines, all the different stuff that goes into that kind of thing. You got to put that in there also, to make sure you got enough cash to do the job.
Yeah, a great lesson. And did you involve your mentor on this deal, or are you going to be doing deals on your own? What does that trajectory look like?
Yes, I involve him on the deal. In fact, he looks at every deal I do, because if he has a problem with it, I don't care. I will not get personally attached to any of it. If he doesn't like the deal, why would I do it? I mean, I've got some experience now, but he's got way more experience than I do. So if he sees something I don't, I'm just going to listen to him and I'll pass on the deal instead of going down that road by myself. I would rather have him on board. There's strength in numbers there. I mean, it's so critical to have a team. This is a team sport, something I had to get used to a little bit different, you know, in my past, all the different businesses I had, I didn't have any partners. So this is a team sport where you really need partners on this kind of stuff. And the whole team is, you know, it's your accountant, your attorney, you know, your cost segregation analysis people, your money people that help you put money into your investment. I mean, there's a lot of people, moving parts, management companies. All those people make up your team that you got to have to do this deal right, because you can't be all those things. So, but yeah, I will definitely want to keep him on, you know, anything I go forward. It's worked, you know, I don't need all the deal. I don't need the whole thing. I'm way past that in my stage of life. I realize it's sort of like you watch Shark Tank. You ever watch Shark Tank?
I love that show.
So, you know, and you sit here and we all sit there and watch it, and you talk to the people. You go, you fool, you should have taken that deal, you know. And what are most of those, you know, the sharks always say, you know, do you want all of nothing or you know, something, or a little bit of something, you know, and that's what it boils down to. People get greedy and they think, oh, it's worth this, or you really don't know. It's worth what someone will pay for it. And to bring in someone with a name on board, that will get you farther down the road than owning all of a little bitty deal. And it diversifies you yourself out. So you need to set your pride aside and say, hey, this is the expert. If they're going to get me involved in it and partner with them, you probably ought to give them what they want. I mean, if you can live with that, I mean, that's the way it is. So I have no problem with partnering and giving up part of the ownership to get the experience in there going. And I don't see that changing down the road at all.
For sure. Yeah. I mean, it's great to have more than one set of eyes, multiple eyes on a deal, just to make sure that nothing is getting overlooked and, you know, relying on or leaning on someone else's track record. I think that's really great advice.
And I don't mind telling you my partner's name. His name is Mark Kenny. He's with Think Multifamily. So, you know, that's who I partner with him on. If he doesn't want to partner on the deal, I'm not doing it. So.
Awesome. Well, appreciate you sharing so much of your experience, Tracy. I know you've also got some other exciting projects coming up, and yeah, we'll have to revisit and see how you're doing it in some time. So thanks so much for coming on. Please now take a moment to give the listeners a way to get in touch with you and anything else you'd like to share.
Sure. My name is Tracy Hubbard. Phone number is area code 817-291-5766. If I don't answer the phone, it's because I probably don't recognize your number, but I do return calls and I return them quickly. My email address is Tracy, that's T-R-A-C-Y, at hubbardcapitalgroup.com.
Awesome. All right, Tracy. Well, thanks so much for coming on. We'll see you next time.
Thank you so much. Have a great one.
Thank you so much for listening to Passive Income Unlocked. Before you go on to continue with your amazing day, please take a moment to reflect on what you truly desire in life. Then think about one thing you can do to push the ball forward in that direction. Also, please head over to iTunes, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts and leave an honest rating and review of this show. It really would mean so much to me. Passive Income Unlocked is brought to you by Lux Capital. Lux works with investors nationwide to invest in real estate. We are closing the investing gap one investor at a time. Connect online at www.lux-cap.com, LUXE-CAP.com, for tons of free educational content to further your success.